This is episode 177, recorded September 9th, 2013.
Perhaps you noticed the lack of intro music.
Sorry.
It's because our computer broke.
Died.
Completely.
Shuffled off this mortal coil, much like Monty Python's infamous parrot.
Right. So, this is we're being recorded off the iPad.
Yes.
And until further notice, that's it's going to be...
We are working on getting a new computer.
Yes, but we don't have one yet. So, there. That's out of the way.
Now so, our apologies for the lack of groovy theme music.
Yes, but...
At least you have a podcast. We could just try to sing it. How does it go? I don't remember how it goes. I made you laugh. Look at that. That's pretty good.
Okay.
Usually you just kind of look at me with a long-suffering sort of look on your face.
No, I don't. Okay. See, I made you laugh. All right. So who do we got lined up for the day?
We have Sean in Asheville, North Carolina. Is Sean new?
New contributor.
Sean is new. Mm-hmm. I have a different friend in Asheville, North Carolina. They probably don't know each other.
Probably not. Asheville's fairly large.
Mm-hmm. Bob in Boston, and Matt in Perth, Australia, and Tony, New York, and Dr. Bob from the North Shore of Boston, not to be confused with the previous mentioned Bob from in Boston.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
So let's start with Sean.
Okay. He says, just wanted to say howdy and let you know I've been enjoying your podcast since around the beginning of the summer. To give you a little background, I've been keeping fish since I was 13. Got my first job at the local fish store to support my habit then as well. Since then, I've kept fish off and on. Last year, I got a random email from Amazon with an aquarium sale and the game was on again. Anywho, a question for you. I could Google as well, but it's more fun to interact with a human on this. He says, there are approximately zero fish keepers in the area. My family's bored to death of my fish talk. Oh, that's too bad. He says, for the first time ever, I'm intentionally trying to breed fish. Of course, I've had live bears and also had some breeding angels once upon a time. And he wants to raise the fry. Currently, I'm working with Daniel Margaritatus.
Mm-hmm. Celestial pro Daniel.
I almost said margaritas. I don't think that's quite the same thing.
Not quite. Margaritatus means literally that it has pearls on it. It's pearled. Celestial Pearl Denio.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which part of that is pearl?
Margarita.
That's what margarita means?
It is one of the meanings, yes, of pearl. Yeah.
Oh. In what language?
In Italian,
sorry,
it refers
kinda...
to daisies and pearls. Both can be referred to that way. But anyway, That's what the word means, yeah.
Oh. No idea. Mm-hmm. The first batch, I only pulled 5 out, and they've been raised to the point that I put them in the tank, a 4-gallon cube that their parents were in before I pulled the parents, and put them in the breeding setup, which is a 20-gallon long. I now have 30 fry in a small hang-on-the-back refugium, and I'm about to collect my next batch from the breeder tank, and I'm thinking I want to move the current occupants of the hang-on-the-back to another setup. My first thought is to put them in plastic shoeboxes from Home Depot and then each weekly batch in another one to raise to the point where they're big enough to put in a larger aquarium and not be eaten. Any thoughts on intermediary setups for the fry? How about filtration? Thinking sponge filters. I'll be collecting fry every 2 weeks from the breeder tank.
Okay. Well, this is a cool undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, one funny thing about these Celestial Pearl Denios is that they don't produce large batches of fry at a time necessarily,
mm-hmm.
but they do produce fry on a constant basis.
Kind of frequently.
Yeah. So this is a good way to do it where he's, you know, putting a weekly batch in one and then keep going. And they grow fast enough if they're
kind
healthy.
Kind of a rotating system?
Yeah, about, you know, 8 to 10 weeks after after they've hatched, you can put them in with the adults. But in the meantime, you have 3 or 4 tanks where you can have... You know, them growing up. It's a good way to do it. I like his idea, actually, of the Home Depot
plastic shoe boxes.
And it's very similar to what is done with some killifish. And in terms of the filters, there are plans for a do-it-yourself sponge filter with an overflow style. It's kind of cool that's used in the shoebox tank. So I would Google, let's see, DIY killifish sponge filter, PVC.
Okay.
And you probably get them, the plans. They come with pictures. Kind of a nice filter to use in a setup like that. Basically, it's a PVC elbow with foam on one end, and the water sort of flows into it, and it's an air-driven sponge filter, essentially, a small one, but it works well for the situation that he's looking at.
So sounds good.
I would suggest that.
He has another question, too. He says he's feeding Walter worms to them, and they love it. He just got a Daphnia culture as well, so he's just starting it. He wanted to know if you had any tips for the Daphnia culture, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would say Walter worms are good to go. You know, good fish food for Celestial Prothenia is an excellent food for them, and so are Daphnia. And in terms of Daphnia, I would say, I don't know which strain you have, and there are a lot of strains out there, but I would say, here's a good food. This is my favorite Daphnia food, okay? You get spirulina powder, mm-hmm. like from a health food store, and you get some garbanzo bean flour and some
rice flour. Which, if you can't find garbanzo bean flour, just go get, if you have a good, powerful blender or a wheat grinder or something, you can just get dried garbanzo beans and grind it up yourself.
Yeah, or beat the tar out of them with a hammer.
Yeah, I don't think it would get very...
No, I don't know.
Very floury. We don't really do that. You're just in the mood to hit things with a hammer. Maybe I used all that lava rock pounding you were doing yesterday.
Maybe so. But the... the chechi... I just said that, didn't I? I
meant we always call them chechi because it's Italian. He means garbanzo beans.
Yeah.
Plus, chechi is more fun to say than garbanzo beans. When you say garbanzo beans, I think of Gonzo from The Muppets.
Okay. He's fun, too. But yeah. Anyway.
Don't grind him up into flour, though.
One part spirulina flour, one part garbanzo bean flour, one part rice flour, or wheat flour, either one, if it's whole wheat flour. And you get that, and you mix it up. You get maybe a tablespoon, 2 tablespoons right in there. Put that in about 4 ounces of water. Put it in an eyedropper bottle. Keep it in the fridge.
And you just how many drops do you put that. In it?
Depends on the size of your culture, you want the water to be just a little bit sort of hazy when you put it in, and then they clear it up within the next 24 hours.
Okay.
Great food for them. They thrive on this stuff.
Well, good.
That's my tip. But if you have any other specific questions about that, I'd be happy to help you there.
That's a good tip. So thank you, Sean, for writing in, and welcome as a new contributor. He actually said a very nice thing, too. He says, he was thinking about buying us a field recorder, but dang, they're expensive.
See, if we had a field recorder right now, we'd be okay.
That's true.
But we do appreciate the thought.
We very much do. And if we get a Kickstarter project going to buy one, we will definitely let you know.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Cool. And welcome to the show officially as an Aquariumaxer.
So we're going to Matt in Perth in Australia. And he was talking about the podcast not coming out of both earbuds if you're listening to it on a split stereo kind of thing like that with earbuds.
Right.
And he gave us a trick to try, which I don't know what it was because it was some fancy post-production editing thing that you did while I wasn't around. So.
Right. But you did try the
fancy post-production editing trick.
I did.
Before the computer broke.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, it worked, and it comes out of both ears evenly now, so that's good. He says, this is good news. Yes, it is. Your new audio issue is the ad. That's what I call the break when we hear about Principons, and episode 176 had no voices.
Yeah.
Oh, what happened?
It's just the music was there, which is, I knew that was going to happen because the thing had been messed up, and so I just pasted the sound in, the music track, and I didn't get it all fixed.
Oh,
just got part of it fixed. But yeah, so we're actually going to have to redo that because Prince of Pons, as Matt notes later on, is not really very active anymore.
Oh, I'm really? He's not doing it anymore, huh?
It's working on other podcasts and stuff, I probably ought to switch that out anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we get the new computer, we'll just make a new break.
A new template.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but thanks for letting us know.
Yeah.
So...
And he also mentioned that pretty much all of our audio problems mm-hmm. have related to the intro and outro music.
The outro?
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
It's a commonly used term now.
You're just pulling my leg.
No, I'm not. It's right there.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Who came up with that?
I don't know.
Shouldn't it be like...
Exit music?
Exit music or...
Conclusion music?
Yeah, or ending music? Outro.
They use it. It's true.
That sounds like a space age outie belly button.
Yeah, kind of does.
He says it is sometimes possible, depending on what your computer rig is, to turn off your fans for recording.
Right.
They're off now. Yeah.
And we found out part of the problem with our computer is that it was getting too hot.
Mm-hmm. So turning off the fans wouldn't have been a good thing.
In this case, maybe not. But we need to get... we need to make sure our new computer's capable of handling that. Hopefully
it was... Oh, excuse me. It was old. The computer was old.
Yep.
It was almost old enough to start kindergarten, which for computers really old.
Yeah. And he says that that he had mentioned before, too, the USB extension cables. So you could press record and walk back to where the microphones are if it's several feet away.
Oh, yeah. That means we need several feet in the living room. Ha ha.
Yeah.
Okay. He says, I suspect you'll reject this next suggestion, but I would be happy to contribute a little money towards a portable recorder. A Zoom H2N, for example, is only $180 on Amazon. You could do a Kickstarter, and if 20 of us contribute $9 each, you have our new portable HD audio recording solution. It really is nothing out of my income, and it'd make me and other listeners, I suspect, happy that you have a new recording device. Why on earth would we reject that suggestion?
It's a good suggestion.
I love that suggestion. That's great.
And maybe we hadn't told him, but we actually had started on that very thing.
We did start making a Kickstarter project.
To get a field recorder like that.
We didn't get it up, though, because...
Too many things were happening when we had to get ready to move.
Well, we had to move, and then we didn't have to move, and then we did have to move, and
it got all crazy. So
then we moved, and
but now we're back on that. We really want to get that running.
So yeah, in fact, that's two people. I think it's two of the nine, right?
Two of the nine people. Yeah. I mean, two of the yeah.
I'm sure there's nine of you.
There's at least
nine.
No,
it'd be 20.
20 people who would donate $9, or nine people who would donate
$20.
$20. I don't know. Yeah, I think we could do it. It'd be cool. I also was wondering about other aquarium podcasts. And you know what? They are few and far between these days.
Yeah, he's saying Prince of Ponds hasn't done anything, really.
They haven't done very much. Pet Tech hasn't done very much lately. Of course, the Bailey brothers are gone now.
That's so sad. Where is everybody? Didn't there used to be more of them? There used to be, what, Blue Zoo?
Blue Zoo's still around.
Are they
so
still
Blue
around?
Zoo Radio is a good one to check
out.
Who else?
Anybody else?
You know what? There aren't very many that I can think of that are not... They're just either generalized or freshwater. There just aren't very many around.
Are there more marine ones or something?
There are a lot of reefing ones.
But not very many freshwater, huh?
Right.
Huh.
There really aren't. That are still producing. I mean, you can go on iTunes and download
the old episodes,
Pet Fish Talk,
right?
Yeah, years of that. And that's a good thing for a lot of people.
They just aren't making new ones.
They're not making new ones. And there are other older ones out there, and some of them are gone now, like the Planted Aquarium podcast. They only had like 6 episodes, but they were good. But they're gone now. You can't get them anymore.
They don't have them up anymore?
Nope.
I wonder why.
If you go to iTunes, it says they're up there, but you try to download them and they're gone.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Like that. So, yeah, sad. But if anybody else knows of any that you regularly listen to besides Blue Zoo Radio, which is the only one that comes to me right now that's still producing, let us know. That would be really helpful.
Yeah. And they don't have to be based in the States.
Yep. And you guys think about me. When I'm exercising in the morning, I can't listen to myself. I don't have very many
well,
podcasts.
Well, you've actually been listening to reptile podcasts.
Yeah, because they have them, and I'm interested in that too. But I usually listen to fish ones, but I've run out. I can't because I finished Pet Fish Talk a long time ago. So it's kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to Blue Zoo when I can too, but I have I listen to more stuff when I'm exercising than there is stuff to listen to.
You go through them too fast. He says, finally, I think you talked about the weather in Perth in Western Australia. This morning, the minimum was 37.4 degrees Fahrenheit.
Which is quite cold.
That's freezing.
Almost. Not quite.
Well, I mean, figuratively, like, cold enough that it might as well be freezing because it's only 4 degrees above freezing, so what's the blooming difference?
Well, he was referencing this in... We talked about on the last podcast about how it would be a good place to keep koi and goldfish because the water wouldn't freeze, probably.
Oh.
And I was wondering for sure if it would, but
I was figuring it
probably
would
didn't.
If that's spring temperatures, because he says it's spring.
Well, let's keep going and see what
he says. Believe it or not, it is spring here. You wouldn't know it with that minimum temperature. In the summer, it can reach 106 degrees Fahrenheit. Rarely goes below 32 degrees here, but as you can see, we have quite a variety of temperatures. Snow, for example, as far as I'm concerned, is a myth. Ha ha ha. Surely it can never get that cold. Oh, well, then, they don't have quite the range of Utah, because
right.
Utah will get up that hot, but it gets,
colder.
10 degrees outside for weeks on end.
10 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's... See, what I'm saying is, in a place like that, even if it gets quite cold like that, and that is cold,
that's still not quite
you can still
freezing.
Keep goldfish and koi pretty easily because you know that it's never going to freeze down to the bottom of the pool
that's
with
nice.
Temperatures like
yeah.
that. So, that's good. It would be a great place to keep them.
That is cool.
Of course, 106, you'd have to make some, you know, have fairly deep water to keep it cool and aerate it and stuff. But,
okay, well, yeah. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you very much.
Tony in New York. He says, hello, Aquarimax. Did I hear correctly that you warned last time against changing more than 20% of the water in a red cherry shrimp tank? I know that the conventional wisdom, Pet Fish Talk guys, agrees with you, but I am getting the idea that this is extra important for red cherries. Please comment.
Okay, well, when I did mention that, I was referring specifically to Juliet's setup, because we know she has some issues with her water supply, the quality of her water supply. And so she has said before, if she changes too much water, that it will wipe out her shrimp. And it is true that shrimp in general are more sensitive to water quality than many fish are. And so if you do a large, say you have a tank with some slightly acid water in it, you have alkaline water from your tap, and you do a fairly large water change, you could have ammonium turning to ammonia, if there was ammonium in your water, and that could kill the shrimp. But that said, I do 30 to 40% water changes on our 20-gallon that's full of shrimp, and it's still full of shrimp, and it will be full of shrimp no matter what I do. they do fine. So I would say, well, water changes, you do have to be a little more careful with red cherry shrimp than some others, and it does depend on, you know, some shrimp species are more sensitive than others, some shrimp morphs are more sensitive than others, but in that particular case, I was referring just to Juliet's setup and her particular water situation.
Okay. He also says, very much looking forward to the Stingray and Pet Fish Talk interview. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for these to happen. Yes, we'll work on that still. Try to get those done, because that would be really cool. He says, I have a question for the Pet Fish Talk guys, too. Tom and Nevin are famous for saying that aquariums don't use water, they borrow water. I recall that when he's saying you here, he's talking to Tom and Nevin. So should I read this now, or should we wait until
We should probably wait, because we're going to try to get them on the show if we can.
Well, we'll save that for later then. And if anybody else has questions for them, send them in, and we'll collect them all in a little Tom and Nevin question folder.
Okay. Well, you know what occurs to me? Do we have on the list here, do we have Robert in Boston? Bob in Boston?
We have Bob in Boston, and have Dr. Bob.
But do we have his... We don't have his stuff in there. So I need to talk about this. Sorry about that. I forgot to paste it in.
Okay.
Got kind of lost somewhere.
In the script for tonight?
Yeah. Could you remember last time we talked about... It was the time before last. We talked about his Altum angels that he had gotten from Jim Carmark.
Right. Okay.
And some of them had died.
Mm-hmm.
But he was keeping several of them, and he was worried about the mycobacterium. And we said that the mycobacterium tends to grow slowly, and so what wiped them out was it was not likely that his fish would have contracted mycobacterium since he got them and then died from it.
Because there wasn't enough time.
They could have contracted it, or they could have already had it, but they wouldn't have both contracted it and died from it in such a short period of time.
Okay.
And so he wrote back and basically said that he was... Bob wrote back and was sad to report that all of them had been since passed.
Oh, no.
And so he doesn't know exactly what was going on.
It's a bummer. But,
yeah, he's worried about the whole situation, because if it's not mycobacterium, because he had read that heard that on our podcast shortly after they had all died.
Mm-hmm.
So he's wondering what's going on and was a little bit too uncomfortable about the whole sad situation to be able to think about it too rationally, but he's going to... You know, try to figure out what's going on. And,
very sad.
It's a sad situation. So our condolences go out to him, and hopefully he can figure out what happened.
Yeah.
But he also said, he said some cool things that had happened to him, too. You know, he said that you pronounced, the name of the Brazilian river that you were trying to pronounce. He said you pronounced it right on.
I don't remember what it was, but during the...
Atabapos, I think it was.
When was that, when I was reading about his fish?
Yeah, talking about that was where the locality where the fish came from.
I seriously did?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
And he had this really cool thing, and unfortunately I don't have it with me, and I can't open my iPad to get it, because if I do, I'll wreck the recording, which is kind of dumb.
I know.
But he said that when he was a kid, he had this pond... it was a 10,000-gallon pond, I think, because his parents used to have the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Did I tell about this last time? I hope not. I
think so.
But anyway, he had this pond with the Oscars, and he put a pair of Oscars in that, and they would do cooperative hunting. No, we did talk about that.
We did talk about that.
Okay, so there
were little
okay.
wolf fish. That's yeah, pretty cool. Cool.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so is that's everything from Tony, right?
Yeah, that's everything from Tony until we get to
and
the Bailey brothers, if we're able to
hopefully do that. We'll be able to get a hold of them.
Yeah.
It will help when we have a computer set up again so we can try to email people.
Right. It will be a little more organized podcast, too, because we'll be able to look at notes and
refer
to things.
We're hoping, next week we'll have one set up.
So. We are hoping. It's supposed to arrive before, I think, Wednesday of next week is the latest day it could arrive, but it could arrive as early as this Friday.
Okay.
So let's hope it's more like this Friday.
For the earlier part. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we've got Dr. Bob in Boston, and he says, I am a doctor, but I don't play one on TV.
Do you remember what that's from?
I know it's from something. I know it's a quote.
Where he says, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV.
Ah, what is that? Give me another one from the same thing.
I can't because I don't remember what it's from either. Ah! But I do. It resonates with me, though. It strikes a chord. It rings a bell. I'm there. I feel it. It's very familiar to me.
We'll have to figure out what it's from.
Yeah, or he can tell us.
Yeah.
But it seems like I should know that.
I should know what that is.
Yes.
Okay. He says, thank you for taking my question. I found the forum, nanfa.org, and wetwebmedia.com to be very informative. I will have to spend some hours devoted to reading more.
Cool.
I did find it interesting that wetwebmedia contributor Bob Fenner holds a fairly strong opinion against using natural salt water. Some of his reasons do not surprise me. Unwanted organisms, pollution, consistent salinity, and the like. I realize that a closed system is more susceptible to problems. What surprised me, however, is that he claims that even after sterilization, natural salt water is inferior to synthetic. He writes, the strongest point against real seawater is that it dies, both biologically and chemically, more quickly than synthetics. It's a fact. You must change part of the water more frequently with natural water, depending on the size, type of setup, filtration, etc. 5, 10, 20% or more a month is often recommended. Many mixes should be changed just as frequently, but often, especially in terms of appearance, like yellowing, you can cheat more than with natural water. He concludes his article by saying, some folks assert that natural water must be best for natural livestock. Maybe they think their aquaria are little pieces of the ocean. Most systems more closely approximate little sewers. Yuck. I would not be using natural salt water.
This is Bob again.
Dr. Bob. If I were keeping the typical tropicals on
sold
in the trade. Sorry, it's just a little typo. For example, I don't use locally collected pond water to make water changes in my betta tank. What I am doing is keeping some of the most environmentally tolerant tide pool species. The killifish can tolerate salinity from 0 to 50 parts per... What is the
thousand.
T for? Oh, 1,000. Okay. So I'm less concerned with precise water quality. My point, I would heed Bob Fenner's warnings for all other types of aquariums, and maybe I do need to consider the dangers of using natural salt water at all.
And, you know, that's something to think about. The fact that you're keeping these tide pool organisms, they are capable of handling evaporation and rainwater and runoff and all sorts of things that can change the salinity of their water quickly. And, that's a lot of the organisms we had in Hawaii when we did that were similar. Yeah. Tide pool type
hermit
organisms.
Crabs and brittle stars and...
Yeah, the little snails and...
That kind of thing.
Yeah, and like our feather dusters. Mm-hmm. Well, the funny thing about feather dusters is that they thrive in dirty water.
Because they eat a lot? There's lots to eat?
Well, there's more to eat because you've got the...
These are filter feeders,
they're filter
right?
feeders, yeah. And so you've got algae and you've got bacteria in the water and things like that, and they eat that. And so you remember Haleiwa Bay?
Mm-hmm.
It was full of feather dusters, and it's kind of dirty, kind of grungy, you know?
We never actually went to that beach.
We never went to the beach, but we went to the bay. Remember when, like, the whale-watching tour?
Oh, okay.
And other times when we'd just go to the bay. We never hang out at the beach there, but we would go to the bay sometimes. And they had feather dusters all over the place. And Kaneohe Bay was also full of feather dusters. And I don't think that's so much because it was dirty, but because the current was just right there. But anyway, it's just one example of how that works out. And so some of the creatures that you keep in the tide pools can... I take Dr. Bob's point too. That,
but if you're keeping marine fish,
right, you wouldn't want to go just pull the water out, and especially if you're doing a reef tank where you want to grow corals and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you're pulling out natural salt water, there are going to be concerns you need to worry about that he doesn't have to worry about because he's just keeping these really hardy organisms. Yeah.
Corals and things like that. What does he mean the water dies?
I think he's saying that, first of all, the organisms die that are in the water. Like the planktonic organisms you pull out of the ocean and you put it in your tank in your house are going to have very different environment and they're going to tend to die.
Okay, which pollutes the tank.
Which pollutes the tank. And he's also saying that chemically, the stability in the water that's there in the ocean is also going to break down.
Stability of?
Various things like pH and stuff in the water are going to break down and change quickly when you put them in a tank. Rather than being fairly just stable because they're in this huge body where everything is constantly being...
the inconsistencies.
Basically, yeah. So that's what he means there.
Okay.
I believe that's what Bob Fenner means.
Okay.
There's a lot of Bobs today.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay. Bob, Dr. Bob, not Bob Fenner, has two questions too. Number one, he says, my beta loves live food, especially mosquito larvae, but I am concerned about diseases with the pond water. Is there an easily obtainable live food that would not involve more tanks and cultures like brine shrimp? He will eat the pellets, but I get the sense that he's waiting for something to wiggle.
Betas do love that, don't they? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I can think of some that don't necessarily involve tanks, but ones that don't involve cultures, that's kind of tricky. But here's a couple of ideas.
You can always go buy just some fruit flies at the... pet store.
One of my ideas was going to be do the flightless fruit flies.
I had an idea.
Yeah.
That was a good idea.
It was a good idea, yeah. If you just get one of those little cultures, because you don't need, you know, 400 fruit flies a day, which is what you'll get if you get it, you have a 32-ounce deli cup size like that one over there.
They can't see it.
Oh, I'm pointing for your benefit just for fun. Okay.
I know where it was.
I know. But if you just get one of the tiny cultures that you can get like at the big box stores of... the Drosophila hydei, the slightly bigger fruit flies. Those work really well for bettas. They don't produce quite as much. You probably have some surplus you'll have to get rid of some other way if you have other tanks or whatever, the way fish that'll eat those. But you just give them one or two of those every day or, you know, several a week. He will love it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take up much space.
Yeah.
And you can, it might take him a little while to get used to it. I've had some bettas that take to them immediately and other bettas that take a few days to figure out how to actually catch them properly because they're dancing around on the surface tension of the water and they're not used to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, natural wild bettas are, you know, they're old hands at that, but some of the bettas who are used to pellets take a little while to get used to it, but once they do, they really love them. So I'd suggest that as an option.
Can he, I mean, he likes mosquito larvae, can he, if there's a pond or something nearby, he could just go net them out, it's just more work, right?
It is more work. You can introduce pathogens into your tank, potentially.
Oh, right. That was his question.
Excuse me. And you can also introduce the hydra and things like that into your tank. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are other issues, too. But, you know, I've fed mosquito larvae to my bettas before. It can be done mm-hmm. without a problem. But I see what he's saying. Yeah. It's certainly an issue.
I just forgot that's what he said.
No, it's okay.
Must be getting tired.
But there are relatively few pathogens you can introduce with fruit flies because you're going from terrestrial to aquatic. It's, right. You know, and it is very similar to their natural food because they eat small flying insects that land on the surface of the water, so it works out.
So he'd probably enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, his second question is, you have talked about occasions when you need to euthanize a fish. How exactly did you do this?
Okay. What I will often use... is the active ingredient I use is clove oil, which I put into the water, in the form of overdose on bag buddies. Bag buddies are fish, what would you call it? An anesthetic for fish, for when you're shipping fish, basically.
It kind of chills them out and relaxes them.
Right, but if you, it does contain some clove oil, which is an anesthetic, and it, if you overdose on it, it doesn't hurt them, but it does... does cause them to...
put some to sleep.
Go to sleep. I don't know that that's the best way to do it. I don't feel like there is really a good way to do it because you're killing fish, but sometimes you have to. Some of the methods that we've discussed on the show also would be to get... be able to bubble carbon dioxide through the water in fairly large quantities. And I think the next time I need to euthanize a fish, I'd like to try the method where you get some dry ice and don't put it into their water, because, you know, that'll freeze the water, but where you get that and put it into a container such that you have an airline going from that container into the water that the fish is in. And so the...
You wouldn't do that in your normal tank, though. No. Take it out and...
You're right.
And put it in a smaller
holding container. Put it in a smaller holding container and bubble the carbon dioxide through that. And then that would... Should dispatch the fish fairly quickly, let it fall asleep. And and I want to try that next time. Because the clove oil works fairly well, but it's... Sometimes you have to dose it, and then you come back and see it hasn't worked yet, and you're wondering if the fish is suffering. You put more in, and you have to do that, and I don't really like doing that. Luckily, I haven't had to do it for quite a while now.
Yeah.
Because I really don't enjoy it, but you do have to do it sometimes. So, those are a couple of ideas. Some people advocate freezing, but I think the freezing is probably not the best way to do it. It's probably less comfortable than some, but you know, I think there are worse ways to do it too.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, so there are a couple of ways. Hopefully that helps.
Alrighty, I think that's everybody.
Is it?
Yep.
Okay, I really hope I'm not missing somebody.
Well, that's everybody that is printed on my little paper.
Right, here. But with our computer being down and me only using the iPad, I'm a little worried that I've missed somebody.
So if we missed you, it wasn't intentional, and we'll find you again when we have a
real computer back. So anyway, we're glad that at least we could do this. That's something.
It's better than nothing.
And until next time,
may the fish
be with you.